This episode of DLC is brought to you by Alienware. So I've got a question for all the gamers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories, like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance. So I'd visit Alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark. I've lost count of the number of times that we've had to do this show with heavy hearts. Every day there seems to be more injustice and less empathy in the world, and this week was particularly bad, and it weighs on us, but we're here to talk about video games for the next 90 plus minutes, so that's what we're going to do. It's not easy for us to set aside what's going on in the world and talk about our hobby, but hopefully for the next little while we can all enjoy it together and focus on some positive things that we all love. So let's start that music. Whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Your downloadable commentary for the week delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our sponsors this week, Brooklinen, The Gaming Ride Home, and Squarespace. Squarespace! They're bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games in their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who is also the host of the brand new official Last of Us podcast, what? Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Yeah, it's announced. I'm not sure I can say much more other than that, but there's an incredible trailer out that you can find on your podcast provider of choice. It is the official The Last of Us podcast, and the first episode drops June 9th, and I'm so very excited for people to hear what we've been making and what we've been doing. Secret thing. That was one of the secret things. There it is.
Pretty big secret thing, dude. Pretty big.
Yeah, it was.
You wanna talk? I mean, you got to talk to everybody, right? Every Druckmann, the cast, this is amazing.
Yeah, I think I can say what the trailer says. Neil Druckmann, Ashley, and Troy, Gustavo, who's the 2-time Academy Award winning composer, also the composer on The Last of Us. It's like I said, I can say what's in the trailer. It's real good. It's real good, everybody. I'm very excited. June 9th. Yes, it is on RSS, the official The Last of Us podcast. You can find it and listen to the trailer and get excited for June 9th.
Our little host is all grows up. He's all grows Aww. Up. You know, well, dude, I could not be happier for you. It is the perfect person for the perfect project. What a dream job for you. It's your favorite video game of all time.
It's pretty incredible. Even Ellie has to grow up sometime. You know what I mean? So even I get to grow up. But thank you, man. I really appreciate it. And yeah, I'm very excited.
If there's anyone that listens to this that possibly missed that announcement, go listen to the trailer. You're going to be blown away. You're going to be like, what have these guys been doing on DLC this whole time? This is like this rinky-dink amateur hour. Christian graduated to the big time. The real, it's got production value and cool mute. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm very excited. Yeah. Well, I'll say more as it comes out and I'm allowed to say more.
All right. Well, we'll stay tuned for that. But we have a very fun, exciting episode for you, talking about new consoles, talking about games that we have been playing, and there are a lot of them. And we have an awesome guest to do it with. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, I'm so excited because DLC stands for Dice Learning and Coaching. Because we have Twitch streamer, Tiefling Warlock, and sometimes Dungeon Master of Rivals of Waterdeep, adjunct professor from the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater, and full-on math tutor, our friend Mr. Sharif Jackson is back with us. Hey, Sharif.
Hey, I need you to introduce me everywhere. I need you to just follow me and introduce me. That was awesome. Thank you.
Well, you know, when Christian moves on and becomes professional Last of Us podcaster, and I'll be by myself, I'll need a new job. So maybe I can just be professional introduction man for people.
Oh, I do look forward to episode 3000 of the official The Last of Us podcast. It's like, okay, in the opening scene, we're talking about the speck of sand.
Hey man, people have done, you know, minute by minutes on movies, so there's no reason why you can't do that with a video game. You know what I'm saying? You got more minutes.
I feel like a lucky baby boy right now. I'm in the middle. Like, I can't imagine. My brain cannot process the D&D quality that is joining me on this podcast today. Like, both of you guys again. I love this so much. This is going to be a fun episode, and I promise to role play and do my best to keep up.
Hey Sharif, I wanted to ask you about that because you guys over at Rivals have transitioned to working at home as well. You used to do the show all sitting in the same room, right? And now mm-hmm. you've transitioned. How are you finding that? I was checking out your one shot where everybody goes to hell, which was really cool and fun. How's the transition been for the team?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I mean, you know, we've had 2 years of sort of like, you know, we had our thing. We would go, we'd meet in Chicago and we'd do our thing and we go out to eat after. And it was more than a game, right? It was like we would bond and, you know, and like sometimes we'd go somewhere, you know, after in Chicago. So yes, it was very different to do that. Even though, like for me, you know, I live in Milwaukee, so like technically, you know, I had no commute, right?
Right.
But it's still something to get used to. I mean, even though I've, you know, over the years, I've done a ton of like streaming and stuff from my computer. You know, playing D&D, especially because I was the dungeon master during most of the episodes, you know, and having to, you know, I'm so used to going off of people's body language and kind of the unsaid stuff. And you can still see it part online. Of it, man. It's so different.
Yeah, it's a huge part. Being in the same room with people is a big difference. It really is.
Yeah. But I mean, I mean, the game still came out like fun and like stuff. Like, I think we got to our groove. But the other part of it is that, you know, when we're at the studio, we have like an engineer, Joe, who does an awesome job with the sound and the video quality. And now that's kind of all on us, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So like, it might not sound as clean as it usually does, but like our like community is so great, and they've definitely still been supporting and like coming through and letting us know that like they appreciate us still making episodes even despite like, you know, everything that's going on in the world. So
that's great.
So we do have I guess I'll do the advertisements at the end of the show. I'm sorry.
No, please say it here. Say it now. Rivals of Waterdeep is great fun, man. I love what you guys are doing. So please do tell people where they can find it now.
So like, we have a one shot coming up this Sunday, on, June 7th. It will be a musical.
What?
It will be Under Mountain, the musical.
Amazing.
Which I will be DM'd by Latia Bryant, our newest rival. She has told us nothing except that it will be super silly. So wait, that should be fun.
Are you, Do you guys have to make up songs on the fly, or is she bringing songs? How does
no
that work?
Idea. We have I love no it. Idea.
Oh my
Sharif,
God.
How is your snapping? Are you able to like da da da? You could just be that person for the musical, or are you gonna have to like solo it?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But it should be interesting.
That's great.
And then our next like formal season, season 7 starts on June 21st, and like I'll be DMing that season.
Awesome, man. So you're full on prep mode.
Yeah, I'm in prep mode for sure.
All right, well that sounds exciting, and people should definitely check that out. Again, where can they find that?
You can find the audio podcast at rivalsofwaterdeep.com, and the video either at twitch.tv/dnd. Or by going to the D&D page on a YouTube, they have a playlist for Rivals of Waterdeep. You can check out all our episodes there.
Great. That's very cool. All right. Well, let's jump in the show now and start the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. Jeff, hold on. Sorry. Sharif, feel free to use that if you need a help with a musical. Just any of our bumpers.
I think sorry to step on it. Get me to, you're just trying to get me to pay your royalties.
Yeah. That's how we make the royalties. Money on this show. Yeah. And those all go to Sean and everybody who's done the thing. So we probably are in a lot of debt, actually.
All right. Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com or by visiting our subreddit. That's 5x5dlc.reddit.com. But Sharif, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
So my story of the week actually kind of surprised me because it's not like the most exciting story, but I think it is like a testament as to where our current industry is. And it's the fact that it was actually a big story that Sony mentioned that, that the PS5 is going to be a separate generation from PS4. That's going to have exclusive games in their new piece of hardware that you cannot play on the PS4 and vice versa. Like, you know, everything on the PS4 won't be in the PS5.
Right.
It was just interesting because like this used to be the norm, right? It was
like, that's what we would expect from a new console generation. And that you're right. It's funny that it's like, there has to be something that has to be explicitly stated. And then also is kind of surprising is
I mean, it like reminds me of when the PS4 came out and like, I suddenly said, hey, we just play games, y'all, you know? And like, I was like, well, I mean, yeah, everything plays games, you know, it's just weird because even though it does feel magic, like it felt like, as derided as the Wii U was, it felt pretty good to be able to like, you know, play like old titles on it.
Yeah, pop your Wii games into the Wii U. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So like I understand that, you know, for that first 6 months or that first year where the where like the new content is like kind of light, I can see the appeal of backwards compatibility, but to me personally, I don't think it's that big of a deal past that time. So yeah. I kind of like that Sony is kind of doubled down, like, yo, like we're putting all of our energy into making this super powerful system, and we're gonna use it. You know,
yeah. Well, the official statement actually from Sony's Jim Ryan, who was speaking to GI.biz, he says, "quote." We have always said that we believe in generations. We believe that when you go to all the trouble of creating a next-gen console, it should include features and benefits that the previous generation does not include, and that, in our view, people should make games that can make the most of those features. She said, whether it's the DualSense controller, whether it's the 3D audio, whether it's the multiple ways that the SSD can be used, we're thinking that it's time to give the PlayStation community something new, something different, something that can only really be enjoyed on PS5. Of course, this is a direct shot at Microsoft Series X, which is saying,
explicitly, there will be no Series X exclusives for the first year of that console's life, that everything will play across the family of Xbox titles. And I'm kind of with you, Sharif. I guess it's more consumer friendly to not force people to buy the new $400, $500 box to play the new shiny game. But I also feel like that's what's special about the new box, is the new stuff that you can only play on this that really pushes. Of course, launch games don't really push the new hardware, but they show off some of the things that were not possible with the old hardware. And just having it be a little bit of, extra shiny or faster loading on stuff that you can also play on older generations doesn't really feel as special to me. But maybe I'm in an old paradigm. Maybe I'm just used to, like you said, this was the norm our entire lives. You can't play Super Nintendo games on the NES. You can't play PlayStation 2 games on the PlayStation. So maybe I'm just in an old paradigm, but I kind of feel like it does feel more special to be like, oh, the PS5 can do PS5 things. And there are these special games that come out at launch time,
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Christian, where do you fall on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a weird messaging because we have had this before. It was just done differently, where like Gun came out on Xbox and Xbox 360 or, whatever. There's been like these cross Assassin's Creed Black Flag got an Xbox One release and an Xbox 360 release.
Right.
And PlayStation as well, where it's like cross.
Many of the Zeldas.
Many of the Zeldas.
But also those were different SKUs, right? Those were completely different SKUs. It's not like the same game works on either one.
But I feel like, and I could be wrong here, but I feel like to some extent the Microsoft ones are also going to be different, air quote, SKUs. It would just be basically you put your disc in if you get a disc, and then you will download the right game, right? With like Smart Select or whatever it is, there's some shared code that's on the disc, but the special things you need to run it on Series X are pulled from the internet and it gives you that version so it knows, which version of the console the disc is going in. To some extent, it's like if you can still find a PC game on a disc, and if your PC still has a disc drive, you put that thing in and it doesn't say, oh, sorry, you bought the 1060 version. You have a 2080 Ti, but it doesn't work. All of the stuff. So I'm just totally guessing. But I think that could be something similar to what Xbox is doing. But I also agree with you both that like I want to see games that only air quote, even if it's only air quote, like are only possible on the new hardware. And I think that's exciting. I do remember Killzone Warzone. No, what was it called? The PS4 Killzone.
Two?
PS4.
PS4. Sorry.
I forgot the name of it, but yeah.
It was like Killzone and then had a subtitle. Whatever it is. But I remember that had like quick play. Like you didn't need to fully load before you could play that first kind of open world level, which was a beautiful level when it came out. And I remember doing like sleep mode or whatever. Like I remember there were games that did those things and highlighted those things. Then over the generation, they became harder to do because it's like you're playing any game that's always connected and then you put it to sleep and then you join The Division again and it's like, well, we lost internet connection, so we're taking you back to the title screen. It's like, okay, cool. But I'm excited. Like, I think I said this last week. I'm blown away with what Sony has done with their first-party studios on their hardware. I think we talked about it for God of War, where it's like, how is this on a console that's 8 years old? I'm exaggerating. And my PC,
but Christian, we can no longer believe. Christian, we can no longer believe anything you say about Sony now because you are an inside man. You're a company man now, so therefore, what are we to believe?
That is true. The podcast is a Sony production, so anything I say when I'm allowed to say, if I talk about Last of Us Part 2 on here at all, please know that, yes, I was compensated to do that podcast. So I don't think, I don't think it would shock anyone on this show if when The Last of Us Part 2 comes out, I say I like it.
Yeah.
Surprise.
I should note, as we talk about these games that will be PlayStation 5 exclusive and not work on PlayStation 4, the opposite is not going to be true, at least for games that will be coming out at the end of the year and the beginning of 2021, because also announced this week. Any game that is going into certification as a PlayStation 4 game as of July 13th this year will have to also work on the PlayStation 5. Of course, this does include Last of Us Part 2, Ghost of Tsushima, but any third parties that say, hey, I'm making a PlayStation 4 game, I'd like you to certify it for your system certification. Of course, the process that all games have to go through to be allowed to be on these platforms. Any third party that wants to have their game on the PlayStation 4 platform that comes out in that window, it has to also make sure it works. They have to make sure it works on PlayStation 5. So I guess that's good, right? So there, if you've got a PlayStation 5 and there's a cool PlayStation 4 game that comes out, we know that it's gonna have to work. So that's good, right? Everybody, you agree?
Yeah, but again, it feels weird to make that announcement. It's like it does feel good, but it's like any game that I thought it was after July. Also, I thought was the under was
when the
I read.
certification July 13th. Yes.
Okay.
So
got it.
You start the certification July 13th. That process can take a while. It takes different amount of times for different games, but it can be a process that can take a few months. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Christian. So what is your story of the week other than check out my new podcast?
There's an official The Last of Us podcast.
I knew it. I knew it. I saw that coming a mile away.
Dropping on June 9th. I think for me, it's you know, exciting and depressing at the same time. There was the, I don't know if it was a drone shot. Drones are wild, man. I know we've had drones for a long time, but still drones blow my mind and the quality of video and stills we're able to get from them. All that to be said, Super Nintendo World, Universal Studios Japan, like we're getting our first real looks at it. And maybe, I think Japan is I don't, actually I haven't followed it. This would just be speculation. I hope Japan is doing better than the United States is in terms of coronavirus. I don't know. My ignorance and the crushing every day that's happening here right now has prevented me from being a diligent world citizen. I hope they're doing better and I hope this opens. I'm rambling. The pictures looked awesome. What I'm trying to say is I want theme parks to be safe and I want to go there and I'm excited for it to hopefully come to Los Angeles. Cause I don't know if you all have looked at these pictures, but when I saw kind of the leaked sketches, I was like, yes, okay. But now seeing these pictures along with what Lego did and kind of the thoughts of what Universal Studios is trying to do with like interactivity in the world, I think this looks incredible. I'm curious, Sharif, if you've looked at these pictures and kind of what your thoughts are.
I'm shocked that it wasn't your story of the week, Sharif. I know how big of a Nintendo fan you are.
That's right. it was kind of an easy pick, so I kind of tried to challenge myself a little bit.
You wanted to zag while we zigged?
Yeah, but I think, you know, the one thing that gets me about the photos that they released are the colors. The colors are just spot on. Like, it looks like I'm looking at like Mario 64. Like, it is nuts.
Is that like you have to go week one to have it look like that? Like week two, it looks like Legoland. You know, it's like faded.
Bird droppings on everything.
And I love Legoland, but Legoland is not as pristine as Disney. Like if you go to the two, you're like, oh, that's right. This is Legoland.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just love the colors. And one thing I did when I saw it was I immediately started looking for pipes. I was like, where are the pipes?
And there are some pipes. There are some. Yes.
They have some pipes, you know. There's not.
You're gonna have pipes next week on Rivals. singing vocal pipes. Ah!
Yeah, those pipes. I do have to do some warm up routines, guys.
I mean, it does look like, you know, they call it Super Nintendo World, but it kind of just looks like Super Mario World, right? It just looks like all Mario. I'm staring at it right now, and it looks like there are several different zones that look like they correspond to worlds in Mario. And the bottom left, it looks like there's the Bowser Castle.
That's absolutely Bowser for sure.
Oh my God. Bowser. It's so cool. And in the top, it's got like the sand levels, you know, the deserty levels. And there looks like, you know, they've got the trees that look like Mario 64 trees. And there seems to be some sort of bridge with a ride, like a log ride or something through it. It just looks so cool.
Yeah, I'm totally down for this.
I hope to think that this is step one. And imagine if like LA got Hyrule Castle or something. Either way, like Disney Orlando versus Disney LA or Anaheim have the different castles. Like if this goes well and is allowed to open, I have to imagine they expand and there's, you know, Metroid, Star Fox, everything. But Mario makes sense as the big thing that you do first because, you know, that's what Nintendo is. That's the iconography of Nintendo to so many people.
Yeah. Sharif, do you have like a ride or experience that you would think would be essential if you're doing a theme park like this?
Well, I mean, Mario Kart's the obvious one, right? Have some bumper cars or like a go-kart track or something. I mean, that would just be awesome. Like, especially if they somehow, I don't know how they could do this, but incorporate like items somehow.
Oh my gosh. I mean, giant banana peels on the track and stuff. Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah. 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 I think like that's the obvious one, but I would love if they somehow, and I don't know if they can have this since this is probably like oriented toward kids, but like those like things that like kind of like those big like wind tunnels that kind of like blow you like
vertically. Oh yeah. Yeah, like indoor skydiving or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. How cool would it be if like you put on like a Super Mario World cape or like raccoon ears and tail
oh, man.
And you can like fly up in the air and float down. Like, oh man, that would be so awesome.
Oh, you just kind of blew my mind on just the merchandising angle of you know, you go to Disneyland and you can get all the princess outfits or you can get, you know, stormtrooper outfits and stuff. Doing the different Mario outfits as purchasables inside, you know, you get all the different ones, fireball, you know, white overalls, and you get you know, like you said, the raccoon suit and the cave. Oh, be so cool.
Yep, I'm down.
And Christian, I think you mentioned it is coming to Los Angeles. So I think the only United States location where this is currently planned is for Universal Studios Hollywood, which is hop, skip, and a jump from where we live. But I mean, they haven't even broke ground on that. So who knows when that'll be completed. This one in Japan, the Universal Studios Japan, is set to be opening, they say, in 2021. But like you said, who knows based on the state of the world and, you know, large groups of people in the same place. Who knows how that'll affect things over the next year. But, man, makes me want to just take a trip to Japan just to check it out. Looks really cool.
I mean, there might be a pipe that takes you right to Japan.
That would be so convenient. Christian, I want to ask you the same question. Is there any other, like, attraction that comes to mind that you feel like would be a essential Super Mario or Super Nintendo World attraction?
I mean, I'm thinking of what fun rides could be. So I think Pilot Wings or F-Zero would be absolutely incredible. And then I'd love to see I don't know what they would do for the Zelda world around besides the castle, but I think the two that jump out at me, would be like F-Zero. I mean, there's so many different takes you could do, just like an incredible roller coaster even, where you start off and you just get launched out. And then Pilot Wings, I think you could do something similar to like Soarin' over the world or Soarin' over California. I'm really curious to see what they do, but I'm very excited for it. And I think in very different IP, but they did a really good job with Harry Potter at Universal. So and it looks like this is also going to be handled with the utmost care and attention to detail. And that's very exciting.
Talking about Zelda, it makes me want to hope that they do an entire land. Zelda feels like it should be like, you know, a Star Wars land. It should feel, or a Toontown, you know, it should be a whole area into itself, not just one attraction inside Super Nintendo World. It feels like looking at this, by the way, these are, you know, leaked screenshots that were on Instagram that I think that, as you said, were taken by a drone. Nothing official yet from Universal Studios, but you get a real good view of what it is. And like we've been describing, it really does look like most of it is themed around Mario, and it just makes me want to have, as you said, its own section, like a multi-attraction Zelda area as well, and have each of the properties have their own land and not just their own ride.
That would be so cool.
Super cool. I mean, I kind of feel like, wasn't there for a while a plan of making a Nintendo theme park, like its own theme park, instead of being part of Universal Studios? feels like if they had done it like this, it would have been a success, but who knows?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I think I do remember hearing that there was like rumors about, I don't know if it was anything ever officially announced, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. Certainly exciting. Well, boy, my story of the week, I think I'm going to go with the Borderlands movie because it is happening. It is being directed by Eli Roth, of all people. So one imagines it will be maybe rated R, at least PG-13. Borderlands, of course, is an M-rated game, so certainly a rated R film adaptation would make sense. And now we hear that the lead role of Lilith has been cast, and it will be played by none other than Cate Blanchett, one of my favorite actors, who can, I think, do anything. She's extraordinary. I think Academy Award winning Cate Blanchett, certainly nominated. I think she won. But I'm pretty surprised to have Cate Blanchett. She, of course, have been in genre things before. She was in the very bad, we don't want to even think about it, Indiana Jones movie, playing a very broad villain. But this certainly seems like a role that you wouldn't imagine a star of her caliber accepting. And yet here we are. Evidently, the official announcement, Eli Roth saying, "I'm so lucky to have the amazing Cate Blanchett starring in Borderlands. We had the most incredible collaboration together on The House with the Clock in Its Walls, and I believe there's nothing she can't do." So my question to you, Sharif, does this make you more excited about Borderlands, and does it change your idea of what it might be like?
I, too, was a little shocked that Cate was in it. I mean, I think she's a fantastic actress. I loved her. I think the last thing I saw her was in Ragnarok, I think, which I really liked her in a lot.
Yeah, another genre thing where she's kind of playing broad. So she can do anything.
Yeah, but I am just don't think this movie can be good. Like I am just trying to be optimistic. Like I want to see more takes on video game properties, and I am encouraged that like Randy Pitchford is part of the executive like producer team, so they actually have someone that knows the like a property and it's not just like licensed and they're gonna try to do it. But I just something about it, and I don't know, I can't even quite put words to it, but something about it just tells me that it's not gonna come together in film form. I kind of wish I had a more educated and coherent reason for why.
Well, it's certainly the track record for movies like these is not good. Movies based on video games. I mean, we saw this year, one of the very few films that actually has come out in this strange COVID year is Sonic the Hedgehog, which I liked. I thought was very good and surprisingly good for a video game movie. And it also, I mean, we talked about it on the show. I had the same feeling of like, Jim Carrey is going to be in the Sonic movie. It just seems like a disproportionate level of talent for the IP. And yet I thought he was great as Dr. Eggman and really, it was kind of a throwback to an old style of Jim Carrey that I remember loving, and it worked, you know, it worked. So, I mean, is there any, you see any hope in that?
I mean, I think, to me, it's more the idea of Borderlands works better as an interactive medium than a movie. Like, I feel like just the content of it makes for like a ho-hum movie that's been done a lot already.
Yeah. Post-apocalyptic. So,
So like that's my worry, is that they'll have to have some just really, really strong original narrative that I think is beyond and outside and beyond the game. What the game has done to be like successful as like a 2-hour movie. That's kind of what it comes down to, like, for me. I think that they'll do the best job that they can. Like, I know that Cate for sure is not going to like mail it in or anything. But like, I just worry about just like inherently, like, I feel like this just works better as a game.
Yeah, boy, I feel that. And Christian, you and I are not the biggest Borderland super fans, and I'm sure there are a lot of Borderlands super fans that know the story inside and out and maybe have affection for the story. But I wonder what you think makes a Borderlands movie a Borderlands movie. Like, what are the essential elements other than the post-apocalyptic setting?
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think if I'm looking at a movie that exists, I think it's Fifth Element. I think, like, I like Fifth Element, and I think something, I haven't rewatched it in years, but I remember really liking it, and I think of it fondly. And I think something like that, but where the objective is opening a vault, you know, like getting this thing, or it's like treasure hunting. I think also National Treasure, is that the, what's his name?
Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage, yeah. Like, it's like, I think it'd be a fun adventuring thing that, like,
that has, doesn't take itself too seriously, kind of thing.
Yeah, and hopefully is a little more self-aware than I found Borderlands 3 to be. But I think if it hits those notes right, I think it could be a really fun kind of bombastic adventure where they're going out and having a good time. I think also we mentioned she was in Ragnarok. I think that is a very similar tone to what I could expect from a Borderlands movie where, you know, Thor and Hulk are having fun and partnering up and smashing stuff. And I think something very similar to that, globe trotting in this fun, bright, colorful world. You know, I hope it learned everything from the Resident Evil movies, and it isn't that.
Yeah, I feel like if they were telling me that Taika Waititi was directing it, I'd be like, oh, this is going to be amazing, you know, but hopefully it has that tone. And Eli Roth is an accomplished director. I'm not a huge fan of his stuff, but maybe, you know, maybe they will be able to make it fun and self-aware and silly and still have this adventure element and this level of action that is that makes a great movie. I'm rooting for it. I'm not a huge fan of the franchise, but I've had lots of fun playing those games. So
I'm rooting that I just hope to make it. Like, does everybody just go to New Zealand and every shoot takes a month longer because you have to just quarantine for a month and then you shoot? Like,
Everyone shoots in their own homes on green screen and then they composite them together. actually, have you guys seen that there's a bunch of articles about how basically that's how they made, not at home together, but they can do the real-time compositing with basically like using Unreal Engine. They can real-time composite people on green screen into virtual backgrounds. And that's how they did something just recently that Jon Favreau was involved in. Well,
The Mandalorian, they had, instead of green screens, instead of green screens or painted sets, they just had virtual backdrops that like moved and animated that people got to act against. It's incredible.
And it was all real-time Unreal Engine stuff. It's crazy. So,
wow. You know, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's wild. And you see, you know, that Unreal Engine 5 demo where they're we are using the same assets that Hollywood uses. I think we're very close to the idea of it all being real time. And I think James Cameron is already doing some of that stuff with Avatar sequels where he's looking through the camera and seeing very close to real. I mean, you know, very close to film quality visuals in the camera where he has people mocapping and then he looks through the camera and sees, you know, the background that they're going to put in eventually. So you can composite the shot without having to use his imagination to know where everything's going to be. It's wild. And so, you know, there's I'm saying that tongue in cheek, and it is tongue in cheek, but I don't think we're far away from all of the elements being shot separately and compositing, and who knows.
Yeah.
Anyway, cautiously optimistic, I guess. And as you said, we're far away from a Borderlands film, but it's Cate Blanchett makes me sit up and take notice for sure. Not that she has never been in a bad movie. I will refer you again to that Indiana Jones film, but
which has a director also, not video game related, but Indy 5 got that's a slash film cast story. Sorry, you can save it for later.
It's okay. People can listen to that. All right, let's move on and talk about some of the games that we have been playing. But first, I want to thank our first sponsor, which is Squarespace. Oh my goodness, you've heard me talk about Squarespace for a long time. It's because I've been using Squarespace for a long time. I've been recommending Squarespace for a long time, over a decade. In fact, JeffCanada.com built, housed on Squarespace. Anybody who asks me about building a website, I always say, Squarespace is the only thing you need to know. It is so simple. The tools are so powerful and yet so easy to use. that you can make any website you need. Do you need to sell something? They got e-commerce. You just plug it right into your website. It turns it into a storefront. It's so simple. Do you want to do a blog? Do you want to publish content? It just announce something to anybody. It is so simple, so easy to use. You can make it yourself. You don't have to pay someone. You don't have to learn HTML. You can just do their WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. Tools and make it yourself, which is so satisfying. Save you money, saves you headaches. Plus, it's all optimized for mobile right out of the box. You don't have to worry about people visiting your site on their cell phones. It all works. You never have to update or patch anything. That's all handled for you in the background. And if you ever run into any problems, they have award-winning 24/7 support, so you can get quick and good answers to your questions. It's just the best way to have a website. Plus, if you want to buy your domain there, they have over 200 extensions to choose from. So you can get the domain you want exactly how you need it, so simply, so well. And plus, because you heard about it here, when you go and you check out squarespace.com/Jeff sent me, get yourself a free trial. And then when you're ready to launch your site, use our offer code Jeff Sent Me, JeffSentme, all one word. Save yourself 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain, and let them know you heard it here, which helps us out, and we appreciate it very, very much. Again, that's squarespace.com/Jeff Sent Me, and the promo code Jeff Sent Me at checkout to save yourself 10% off. Ooh, time to talk about the games that we have been playing. Sharif, what's been on your playlist as of late?
What I've been playing the most of, Mortal Kombat 11, they released their first big story DLC. They've been dropping like new characters and stuff over the past couple months, but this is actually an expansion of the story, which I believe is the first for a Mortal Kombat game. And if you're into sort of the silliness of a Mortal Kombat story, it's pretty good. You know, I mean, they pretty much, you know, they keep it like the same kind of tone when there's a whole bunch of time travel, a whole bunch of, you know, people fighting and, spoiler alert, pretty gory. You know, if you enjoy Mortal Kombat, I mean, I think it's really good. You know, I finished the new story, and like, it was, I enjoyed it. And you know, I like also enjoyed that they added like friendships back to the game. Big fan of friendships. And they actually, one thing about Mortal Kombat is, you know, as the years have gone on, like the fatalities have gotten more and more like detailed. And I was really happy that they got these friendships. They really, really like put a lot of detail into them. Like, they put a lot of effort into them. Like, they're really good.
The NetherRealms knocks it out of the park every time, it seems, with their big releases. And now these DLC releases seem to have the same high level of quality and depth of content. I mean, I haven't played it myself, but I'm reading and hearing you guys talk about the length of the DLC story content. I love the fact that there's actually good story content in a fighting game. It just seems so rare. NetherRealm seems to be the only people doing it consistently. And it's cool that they actually put that kind of thing into this DLC content as well, and actually a long, interesting campaign, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. I'll go maybe a step further than Sharif. I loved it. Maybe like 3 hours. Did you play it on Switch also?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
So, you guys both played it on Switch? Oh my gosh.
Sorry, NetherRealm employees that are rolling their eyes. But I'm so glad you put it out.
It was meant to be played.
I'm glad you put it out on Switch. I mean, it's a really good story. Like, it's you know, continues the incredible storytelling they've been telling over these past few games. And I know they're making a Mortal Kombat movie, but like, I feel like I have a great one already. Like, the cutscenes, the animations, like the fight styles that everybody has in those buildups in between fights are just jaw dropping. And then the fighting itself, I really like the new characters. I want to spend some more time with RoboCop, who, spoiler, is not in the narrative, which a lot of those guest characters aren't. So that makes sense. but it's really well done. Like, it is a full package extra, you know, add-on story to the game that tells a really, really great narrative. And I want to play through it a couple more times. And it's just, it's really fun to play. And it's very interesting and compelling to watch and enjoy also. It's really well done.
I love the fact that you framed it like, you know, you're getting that Mortal Kombat movie now. It does look like, especially with Mortal Kombat 11 and the Last Injustice game, it does look like people were dressed up in costumes to make that game, which is wild because that's how the original Mortal Kombat was made. The CG is so good, and it does look and the performance capture, the methods they use to get the performance capture is so authentic looking. It does look like it's real people with face paint on or whatever. And I think that watching a story like that, I would never have thought I would like, right? Because it's so broad. And as you said, Sharif, so gory and so over the top in so many ways that you feel that it needs to be abstracted or stylized in some artistic way. And yet making it look like real people doing this is so much more fun.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And like also, for some reason, RoboCop is a character now.
Yeah.
In the game. And I'm talking about like classic 80s RoboCop, not like that awful remake that they made maybe like 5 years ago or so.
Right.
So to see RoboCop like performing fatalities on folks is really strange.
Yeah, and they got Peter Weller to do the voice, right? They actually got the real Peter Weller. Yeah.
Yeah, so it feels really weird to play with him, but he has some really good moves.
I mean, RoboCop, and especially RoboCop 2, is pretty gory. So it kind of fits for me, but I do love, and I think they did a trailer for it, but like RoboCop versus Arnold versus Terminator. It's just such a fun fight that like, you know, exists. And I like that it exists in Mortal Kombat. I thought DC, whatever that DC one was pretty well done, but they scaled it back to be DC. But now it's like, this has a brutal Joker in it.
Right.
I found all the DLC characters to be really fun to play with and fit the world well. It's I mean, I think you can get the whole thing right now and Aftermath for like $60 or something like that. Like the base game characters and Aftermath DLC.
Oh, it's totally worth it.
Yeah, if you're looking for something to play, I highly recommend Mortal Kombat 11 and Aftermath. It's really well done.
Very cool. Very cool. Makes me want to dip back into that game. Sharif, what else have you been playing?
Finally, been getting into Ori Will of the Wisps. I had never finished Ori in the Blind Forest. I like thought I did, but I had just played enough of it and was really satisfied, and I guess I put it down. So I didn't find that out until Will of the Wisps came out. So like, I was like, man, I gotta finish the Blind Forest. So like I went ahead and like, I finished that, which by the way, has a pretty brutal final level. Like it took me kind of a while to get through like the final sequence. So I've been, diving into Will of the Wisps, and wow, like what an amazing, like presentation for that game. Like even if you knew nothing about like video games, if I put that game in front of you, like you'd be like, this looks and sounds great. Like I can feel the emotions, I can feel the passion from the devs. Like it just puts a smile on my face, you know. It's just a fantastic game, and the gameplay, I think they made some great improvements on it to make it a little more accessible, I think. You know, so I'm about maybe that far into it. I'm maybe a few hours into it, but I'm really, really happy with it. Really happy with it.
Yeah, you're so right about all the attention to detail, all the animations, the tiny little features of animation, the bits that connect moments together. That just seemed like over and above what is necessary. It just makes the game shine. And, you know, we're clearly going to be bombarded in the next several months with all of these incredible AAA games, you know, your Last of Us and your Cyberpunks and all these games that are coming down the pike. I hope that we all don't forget Ori and the Will of the Wisps at the end of the year, because I think it certainly right now is in very near the top of my top five games of the year. And it, you know, I hope it holds on to one of those spots. It's unfortunate how early in the year it came out. It may be one of those things that is a victim of its release date for people's memory, but it really deserves all of the accolades it got. And it deserves to be spoken of again, I think, at the end of the year when we're talking best games of 2020. Because it's so good. And we had somebody else on the show. I think, was it Lana who came on and talked to having played them back to back like you are, Sharif? And it's such an interesting juxtaposition playing the game and its sequel back to back. I have mentioned on the show that I sort of bounced off the Blind Forest, didn't really play it very much, and then loved Will of the Wisps. But it's so interesting to me to hear people who have played them in close proximity, like you have, Sharif, and seeing in stark relief those little improvements and how the game has been tweaked, and you know, hearing you come away saying it really has improved that formula. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's improved an already fantastic game, and just makes it, at least on the early side, a lot less frustrating, I think, because, yeah. Because the Blind Forest can get pretty brutal in some parts with the frustration levels almost in like a Celeste kind of way in terms of trying to get through stuff. So,
Christian, you never really played Will of the Wisps. As much as you were looking forward to it, you didn't really ever spend a lot of time with it, right?
Yeah, I kind of got into it, and then I had the frame rate issues on playing it on a base Xbox, and then other things just kind of came in, and I haven't gone back to it. I do have it loaded onto my PC now that I'm kind of set up and, you know, moved, and I keep meaning to fire it up, but I keep finding something else to play. I don't know what it is. It just seemed like it kind of fell in a weird gap for me.
Yeah, that happens. I've certainly had that happen for me too, but it just seems like so much your jam. You know, it's your stuff.
I don't disagree.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's on Game Pass anytime you want.
Just go
fire it up. Yeah, also been playing Streets of Rage 4.
Speaking of Game Pass, right?
Speaking of Game Pass as well. Just a fantastic love letter to that series, but also feels fresh and new. I think they did a fantastic job with this game. I played it about maybe a year and a half ago, like kind of like a earlier version, and it felt pretty good. But I was still a little worried about how they would actually kind of like bring it all together, but man, they really did. They like got even Koshiru to like do a couple of like music tracks on it. I mean, the music's great unlockables, great like Easter eggs that like transport you back into the like original games. I mean, just really, really thoughtful and like a fun game. And it really feels like a beat 'em up that was made like today, as opposed to like bringing a 16-bit game into the future. Like it like has some smart updates, and yeah, I've just enjoyed it. I've like unlocked all the characters.
I think it's impressive how differently the characters feel from each other, because back in those days, I don't remember any of the characters really mattering. You know, I guess it was slight differences if you played, you know, I don't even remember the characters.
Everyone remembers Skate as the best. It's okay. I get it.
Exactly. I did love Skate.
Yeah, I guess there was differences, but it feels like they have heightened the difference in choosing a character. So maybe I'm just misremembering the old days. Was it always like that?
No. I agree that in general, I think in most like beat 'em ups, there's not that much of a difference. I mean, the biggest kind of difference is like a final fight, like a Hagar versus Cody, a big wrestler versus kind of like a nimble person. Like, but like in general, you like kind of do the same thing. But the interesting thing I find about the characters in Streets of Rage 4 is when you start to unlock like the older versions of the characters, are how those differ from the newer versions. So it's interesting to like play like, you know, the Streets of Rage 1 Axel, Streets of Rage 2 Axel, Streets of Rage 3 Axel, and how like they kept all the nuances of how that character played, but it still works in the new combat system. Like it's really it's like really incredible. Like, I mean, like they must have had to test that a lot to keep that feel, but it's still like, you know, it like doesn't feel like you're like playing this like dated, clunky character, even if like you looked at the pixelation, it looks like that. Like it's,
yeah,
it's just really smartly done.
That's cool. Really well
done. I like the way they updated like the special move also, where it's kind of a roll the dice. Like it's almost like trusting your own skill, or typically in a lot of these old brawlers, you know, you hit A and B at the same time and use your special move, and it will take out people around you on screen, but it also hurts you a little bit. In Streets of Rage 4, that happens. You know, it's a cool move. Everybody has their own, but then it also hurts you a little bit, but it hurts you. It's not like final hurt. You know, it's almost like you see the health bar go down, but then if you beat people up again before someone else hits you, you can earn all that health back. So I don't want to say it's pure skill. Like if you're skilled enough, you can earn all your health back, because it still feels like it has cheap hits to me, which feels authentic to a brawler. but if you're skilled and lucky enough, you can use your special and get that health right back, which I feel like is a really cool risk reward yo-yo effect that they brought into the game that makes it feel more modern as well.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yeah. And the last game I'm playing, another beat 'em up, Treachery and Beatdown City, which is a indie game that launched on the PC and Switch. And this is really interesting juxtaposition of like a 8-bit era kind of Double Dragon beat 'em up in like a turn-based RPG game.
Huh. That's yes. Cool.
Yeah. So like as you go up to people, it pauses as if you're playing like Final Fantasy, and it brings up like all your attacks, your special moves, your like a healing buffs. And like you can choose to like spend like this many like fighting points on this and that. It actually clever. Works well. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Yeah. It like works well. You know, it's like a game that like I've seen in like a development for like a number of years from like a friend of mine, Sean Alexander Allen. And it's also a really good like depiction of like the diversity of New York. And it makes a really big deal. Like you're fighting against like corrupt cops and corrupt politicians and like gentrifiers and that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's like a pretty good, you know, it's like not like a major release, but I think it deserves a lot more shine because I really enjoyed it.
I just pulled it up here on Steam. I like that the description, when the president Blake Orama is kidnapped by the Ninja Dragon terrorist, it's up to you to get him back.
Yep.
That's pretty funny.
That's right.
What a clever idea to mix that brawler style with a turn-based. You know, I'm such a fan of turn-based. It's a cool. I perked up when you said that. This looks neat. And it's got, like you said, like a sort of a 16-bit or 8-bit kind of aesthetic to it. It's cool.
Yeah, it does not seem like it would work on paper, but it works, and it makes fights really challenging because like they slowly train you, and then they just take the training wheels off, and you're fighting like 2, 3, 4 guys, and there's like you like have to like manage all this meter and like all this stuff. It was really fun and really like rewarding as well. So yeah, I would definitely recommend it. I think it's only $20 bucks or so.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's
$19.99 here on Steam. Treachery in Beatdown City. Yes. Cool. First time I'd heard of it. Really cool.
Yeah, fun.
Christian Spicer, what's been on your playlist?
Well, we talked Mortal Kombat 11 Aftermath. Still incredible, as I mentioned it again now. And the only other thing that I've played that I can talk about is...
Yeah, you have played something else, haven't you? You've played Minecraft. Another game. If there was only some way we could figure out what game it was! What game could it be that Christian has played that he can't talk about?
I can talk about Minecraft Dungeons. Speaking of Game Pass, yeah, let's talk about Minecraft Dungeons.
All right.
I've maybe put
Christian,
in...
If the game that you can't talk about is incredible, say nothing over the next second and a half. Oh, laugh! I don't know how to interpret that.
I've maybe played probably a little under 4 hours of it, and I played maybe like an hour and a half of it last night on stream while you, Tim, and I were chatting, Jeff. I need to say, I really like Minecraft Dungeons. I think it is similar to how we talked about Mortal Kombat 11 Aftermath, where it's like, it's not phoned in at all. Like, this is the real deal. It's the same production quality as the main game. It's a really awesome story. The new characters look great. Like Minecraft.
Yeah, it's not like it could have been just like this palette swap or, you know, shovelware. Let's stick the Minecraft aesthetic on something pretty crappy. It could definitely have been that.
Yes. And I think this too, you know, Microsoft owned studio, kind of like Gears Tactics, like another game that shifts the genre of a major franchise and does it with care and quality. And that's what Minecraft Dungeons feels like to me. It is a Diablo-esque style game, but beautiful. Like I'm getting greedy now and I just want to see ray tracing come to it. Because now that I've seen it in Minecraft, but like the particle effects, the explosions, like there's like, you get it pretty early on, at least I did, like a firework arrow that you can shoot. And when that goes off, it's like this, like cool little pop. And like the different areas of the world all feel very unique. And it has nice Diablo style gear upgrade and equipping your character and specking out before you go. Like, handled really, really well. I find the story to be engaging and fun, kind of like self-aware, tongue-in-cheek a little bit. I don't know where it goes, so I don't know if it falls flat, or I'm hoping it gets better because I think it's been good so far. And I say all that then to add, I had read, you know, like, oh, it's Diablo for kids or maybe family-friendly Diablo. I think it's hard, like straight up hard. Like last night, I was distracted. You, Tim, and I were having a great chat. I was not doing well. I have gone back, like, and maybe I'm not grinding enough through earlier levels or earlier difficulties, but I find that once it gets going and ramps up the progression, like I haven't quite found my, I think when we talked about Doom Eternal, I mean, it's not Doom Eternal hard. I don't want to make that, I don't want to equate that, but like, I haven't quite found my rhythm of like when to dodge or when to use a ranged weapon or like how to come in with the sword, but I'm really enjoying it. And I want to get my kids in playing with me as well. Cause I think it's a game that they'd enjoy.
It needs to be co-op. I think that I wanted to be playing with you. I think we should have been playing together. I feel like the co-op maybe wouldn't feel like that, you know? Because I've played it a bunch solo too, and it does get hard. They swarm you, man. Those whatever they're called,
creepers and it gets hard. And like there's, and I don't know what they're called, but like spawn cubes, where it's like they're infinitely spawning characters. You need to get over to them. Like it is no joke. But again, you and I have been accused of being Microsoft fanboys, Jeff.
Have we? I thought we were Sony fanboy. I can never keep up with where my bias is, according to the audience.
Atari 2600 is where it is.
Yeah, dude. Combat forever, for life.
ColecoVision fanboys.
But I'm very excited about this week's PlayStation 5 reveal trailer, which when we talk about, Jeff, we got to have the hype train, and hopefully it does live up to expectations. Bumper
Don't worry.
But this... Minecraft Dungeons, Ori, Streets of Rage 4, like so many of the games we're talking about that are, I think we'll talk about at the end of the year, are all on Game Pass. It is absolutely incredible. And if you have Game Pass, check out Minecraft Dungeons 100%. If you don't have Game Pass and you want a game to play with the family, get Game Pass and you know, do a month of Game Pass for Minecraft Dungeons. I think, and again, I haven't finished it, but I think it's that good. I think it's the care, awesome. I should say, is that high. The quality of the game is that high, and it did not need to be. You know, this could have been Little Mermaid 2 direct to DVD. You know,
can I tell you my really biggest good. Problem with it? It's a weird thing. It's a weird thing. But tell me if this resonates at all with either of you guys. I felt really frustrated and unhappy that the Minecraft Dungeons world was not destructible. It has that aesthetic, and I love it. I think I love Lego. I love that sort of building block aesthetic in lots of things. And I think grand Minecraft creations, as we talked about just a couple of weeks ago with that that big city that, that has been made. I think those things are beautifully beautiful, like objectively beautiful as just blocky compositions. And I think this game, in my opinion, is beautiful.
Yeah.
But also it feels like I should be able to blow it up. It feels like I should be able to knock down trees and shoot things and break things and bust up buildings, and like I can in Minecraft, I can deform the environment. And the fact that I can't in this game, it like rubbed me really wrong.
I didn't go in with those expectations, so that didn't bump for me. I feel like it's a difficult, I imagine it was a difficult decision to make, because it's like, if you can do that, then can you craft? Can you, like, how far do they take it? And it's not Minecraft. So I think they struck the right balance in terms of, you know, simplicity. It's not a simple game. You are speccing out your character and you can upgrade things. But in terms of what the game they're delivering, I think they went the right route. Would I love it if it had Red Faction or Crackdown style destructibility? Of course, I love games like that. So I understand what you're saying, but yeah, that wasn't something that bumped for me going into it.
It feels like the visuals demand that for me, and maybe I'm being unfair, but it I guess I am familiar enough with Minecraft that it just felt like it should be able to affect the world that way.
Unrelated. I haven't played it,
and I guess I assumed that you could.
Right.
News to me.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't specifically think it threw. I just started playing it and I was mad when my weapons didn't do anything to stuff. You know, I just felt like this is how it should work.
But also you start with weapons and you don't need to mine them and craft them, and you know.
Right. It is not Minecraft. It's just that aesthetic feels, I don't mean to kick a dead horse here. It's clearly me layering on something that the game never suggested. It just, it really, gave me a veneer of disappointment when it's not really fair of me to feel that way. But that's just how I just was like, oh, this kind of doesn't feel good.
The brand carries with it certain expectations for you. Right. And I guess for me, I didn't care. Like, I played the Telltale game. Like, I've seen what they're doing, I guess, with this brand maybe more, and I'm okay with it. And also I have Minecraft, you know, if I want that. But I would love it if they did somehow find a way to do it elegantly. But I think that is also hard to do that elegantly.
Yeah. Sharif, as somebody who clearly has Game Pass, is there a reason that you didn't jump into this, or you're not interested, or what?
No, I mean, I installed it. And like, I've been hearing good things about it. It's just one of those games where I don't feel like I need to play it now. Like, I don't need to rush to play it. Like, I'm still trying to get through games like Will of the Wisps, and then when Mortal Kombat came out, I jumped on that. So. I don't try to juggle too many games at once. So like, it might be like one of the next games that I try, but it's just not something that I feel that urge to like jump on.
I wish I had that discipline.
See, I always try to air juggle everybody, and then I never able to pull it off, and I lose. So, you know.
Speaking of more games that I'm juggling, Christian, that completes your playlist. Is that right?
That is every game that I've been playing.
There's not another game you want to mention that you've been playing for many hours on your playlist that you can talk about?
Oh, I mean, I guess Animal Crossing is still, you know, we're still playing that.
Okay, good. I'm glad I checked in to make sure that...
My wife's house has bugs and my kids are very upset about it.
Sharif, are you... You're a Nintendo/Switch fan. Huh? I didn't want to use fanboy, but maybe that applies too. Are you playing the Animal Crossing? Are you one of those people that has been hooked by that game?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't... I've gotten off of it for a little bit. I mean, I kind of like went pretty hard early on. I fully upgraded my house. I terraformed my island. I pretty much had enough money for mostly anything I wanted. So I just took a little break. One reason I took a break also was because I wanted certain villagers to leave my island. and you kind of have to, you know, if like you don't want to time travel, you have to kind of like ignore them for a while. So I was like, all right, I'll just ignore the game for like about 5 days and come back and see what's up. So
it's the same way you get rid of gingivitis. You ignore it and it goes away.
Exactly.
I'm just kidding. That's a reference to a very old 80s cartoon. The other question I have for you, I guess I have to ask you Nintendo things because you're here, and it, you know, there are Nintendo things that have happened recently. Paper Mario, Origami King. Are you excited about this?
Very. Yeah, very excited. Very excited. I think it's a great series. Like it is, like, I know that, like, people say, like, man, they just keep making these Mario games, but there's something different about the Paper Mario series. I've loved all of them. You know, yeah. Even the last one on the 3DS, I don't think a lot of people really played the Sticker Star one. I thought was, like, pretty good.
Yeah, I liked it too. Yeah.
Yeah, but I just love the art style. I just love how like, kind of like the Mario and, like, a Luigi series, it's, like, kind of sillier, you mm-hmm. know, and, like, it yeah. like, makes fun of itself and that kind of thing, which I really like. So yeah, I'm pretty hyped for it.
Awesome.
Before I get to my playlist, let me just stop real quick and thank our next sponsor, which is Brooklinen, my sheets. Oh man. You know, I haven't left my house in months. And so when you're home a lot, you want to be comfortable. You know what I'm saying? I want to be comfortable. Staying comfortable is the best way to stay productive, I think. And I've been so grateful to have my Brooklinen sheets. Crawling into them after a long night of podcasting or working from home is just the best thing in the world. It's got that luxury level of comfort without that luxury level of price. You like softness? Huh? Do you like essentials that help you relax? Do you like comfort? I bet you do. Brooklinen has all those things. Brooklinen.com is the perfect place to find all the comforts for your home. And face it, we're all home way more. And so I'm sure you're realizing maybe your towel, your bath towel is maybe a little older than you want it to be, isn't as soft and fluffy as it once was. Maybe your sheets are a little scratchier than you like. Maybe you're realizing, hey, this doesn't feel great. This doesn't make me feel refreshed and comfortable all the time. This is the time to jump in, get new comfortable stuff at brooklinen.com. They're having their biggest event of the year, their birthday sale. It's happening and you don't want to miss it. You can get incredible savings on sheets, beddings, towels, loungewear, and their newest hammam and linen collections. Hammam. I don't know what that is, but I'm sure it's important. They have their newest collections. I have multiple Brooklinen sheets. Genuinely, wholeheartedly, the best sheets I have ever had, and so soft. I will not go back. I will not go back to my pre-Brooklinen life. And I want you to feel that way too. So even if you're listening after the birthday sale ends, you can still get 10% off your first order and free shipping on all the new sheets, comforters, whatever you buy there, bedding, towels, loungewear. Use our promo code, which is DLC, only at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen.com. Promo code DLC at checkout. Get you 10% off. Brooklinen, everything you need to live your most comfortable life. All right, my playlist. We've already talked about several of the things I've been playing this week, but I want to add one more. As I said, I've been trying to, the last few weeks, really highlight indie games. There are so many great ones right now. And here is another one that just came out last week. It's called Wildfire. And this is a 2D platformer stealth game, which is an interesting combination. It's got this pixel art aesthetic that is quite beautiful. And it is, there's a lot of making jumps and doing platformy type stuff. You also have elemental powers, which is pretty rad. You start out with fire and you get water and earth later. And the game has sort of emergent gameplay elements where these levels, there are baddies that you have to circumvent. You have to get around in some way. You have to sneak by them without them seeing you, because basically if they see you, they can kill you very, very easily. And you can hide in bushes, you can hang from ledges and try to avoid them that way. You can, you know, jump over them, around them, climb down vines, across bridges, all kinds of stuff. And you can manipulate the environment with your cool elemental powers. The fire, for example, which is the first thing you get, You have to actually absorb flame. You can't create flame. You can only manipulate flame, toss it around. And there's a whole RPG system of leveling up your various elemental powers and do various things with them. But you can't just create fire. There has to be a campfire or a torch or somewhere. And you absorb it, and then you can carry it for a while and then toss it at other areas and catch those things on fire. And much of these environments are destructible. Fire creates smoke, which has its own effects on the bad guys. And you can make smoke hang around in enclosed spaces, which will cause them to be unable to see you or cause them to choke. It's pretty cool how creative you can end up being with the way you approach the levels, with how you get from point A to point B, because most of it is getting from point A to point B. There's also a lot of escorting of people through places, which is a little tedious, but also is kind of the game, right? That's what you're doing, is figuring out pathways, figuring out how to hoodwink the bad guys into not knowing where you are, into setting something on fire so they get freaked out and scared, and then we'll do something dumb so you can pass by. All that's, it's very clever. And then you can get water powers, or you can sort of freeze them and freeze over bodies of water and do cool things. It's a really clever game. It's got a very fun aesthetic. It doesn't feel like anything else. You are, it's almost like each level is a little puzzle, and a puzzle with multiple solutions. You really can be creative with how you solve it. And I really like it. This game is called Wildfire. My biggest criticism with it, honestly, is that it leans a little too much into the puzzliness, because it really does stop down after each level and give you a set of stats and how you did, and show you sort of side goals that you could have achieved, and you can get extra RPG currency to upgrade your character if you achieve more of the side goals. And I found myself annoyed at the wanting to do the side goals, because sometimes the side goals force you into a particular strategy or force you to do things that are much more difficult or counterproductive. But the carrot on the end of that stick was so attractive that I found myself doing those things even though I didn't really want to be doing them. And I also, it kind of bugs me when these days, when games stop down after each level and sort of give you a ranking and a status report of how you did. I thought back to a game we have talked about a lot on this episode, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, which also sort of feels like a puzzle a lot of the times. It feels like a stage or a section of the level is a puzzle, and how do you get from point A to point B, and how exactly do you accomplish it? And you have to sort of think just as much as you have to be dexterous, you know? But because the levels are all interconnected and you just seamlessly go from one to the next in this big, ever-evolving tapestry of a world, it feels more like I'm in a place and I'm experiencing a story rather than I'm doing a level in a video game that is judging me on how I do. And I just prefer that kind of experience to that report card thing, you know?
Yeah, I think it depends on the game. Like, I think a testament to Mortal Kombat 11 and Aftermath as well. Like, that story just keeps going. Like, I found it hard to stop playing it because it just kind of keeps going. You win a fight, but then the next cutscene immediately starts, and it's really interesting and compelling. And I really liked that approach. But I also really enjoy Bayonetta and like Devil May Cry style games where it's so intense and it's like an action combat, and I like seeing. You know, I very rarely get the S rank or whatever, but it's satisfying to see. So I think for me, it depends on what style of game it is and maybe how important that scoring is to kind of the replay loop potentially.
How do you feel about it, Sharif? Because I think even the references that Christian made of Devil May Cry, Bayonetta, and I don't know of any game that gives me a ranking where I'm like, I'm so glad that game gave me a ranking. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm a Christian on it. Like, I think it depends on the game. Like in Bayonetta, definitely. Like when you're juggling combos, and you're using that rank to like, you know, to buy things, you know, to level up and buy things. Like, I feel like in that case, it like is good because and it does kind of section off the levels a bit. I do like the immersion though of like a Ori or like a Hollow Knight, where it just seems like you're just like effortlessly flowing from like one place to like another. But the game has to go for that kind of atmosphere, you know? If it's like more about like a, you want that boost of like happiness from beating a tough battle, then I think that like the ranking stuff works.
Yeah. I guess it's a motivator, the thing of like, oh, I could have done better. I could have, there are things that I didn't accomplish that people can, one can. but I don't know. I think I always find those things to be a little too vague for my taste. You know, it says you got a C rank. Okay. Well, what could I have done better? Upon what criteria are you basing this? And I guess, you know, you can intuit a lot of those types of games, as you said, juggling characters or stringing together longer combos. But, and to be fair, Wildfire doesn't really do that thing, but still it's that, it's the sectioning off of stuff. It just feels like there's a cooler world here and I want to feel like I'm in it rather than constantly stopping and being like, here's the checklist of things you didn't do. So I don't know. That's just my own. It's a nit that I'm picking, clearly, to a game that I think is really clever, very much worth checking out. It's called Wildfire. Again, it's not a full price game. It's not a expensive endeavor, but one that looks like, you know, it looks great. It has tons of replayability, and it is a clever, different kind of idea that I think people should pay attention to. Again, it's called Wildfire.
Yeah, I'm pretty interested because I saw that it says it has same screen co-op support.
Yes, that's right.
I'm always looking for stuff to play with my wife. I think like this kind of game with the co-op thing kind of reminds me a bit of that old game, Three Vikings, like a Blizzard's
right, yeah, yeah,
game that like kind of like puzzle game where you team together to solve puzzles. So yeah, I might check this out for the co-op part of it.
Yeah, it's $15 on Steam. I think it was. I think it's the lead designer is a former game journalist as well. Really, really smart, cool game. I mean, just checking out how the smoke is animated in this game, the fire, how it spreads, the systems in the game. Really, really clever and attractive. It's cool. Wildfire. All right. Let's move on now. We do have some VR to chat about, so let's jump in and do a little VR talk. Sharif, you've been playing some VR. Where would you like to start?
I'll start with No Man's Sky, the game that keeps on giving. It literally, like, I can't think of a game outside of probably Destiny and The Division that has had me continue to come back during big, like, releases and expansions. Like,
yeah, and they don't charge for their extra stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Almost everything has been free for No Man's Sky.
Yeah, which I don't know how they're paying their devs, but that's a whole other story.
right.
But yeah, I mean, it's you know, they said, hey, like, we're dropping mechs. I said, you're dropping mechs. I'm back in. You know, I had already started a new game when they came out with the VR version, because they also made a whole bunch of like improvements to the actual like story in a campaign, because like before it was this very ambiguous thing, and like they like kind of made it a lot easier to like a follow. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I jump back in. It is a fantastic VR game. It's one of my favorite VR experiences that I've played.
Yeah.
Like, it might not be the quote unquote best one, but like, for me, it just hits all the right notes, you know, in that, I don't know, something about a game that I previously spent a lot of hours in with a mouse and keyboard and then jumping in like virtually. I mean, it just makes me love it on another level, especially when I'm in space. I mean,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
It just feels like nothing else. I mean,
being in that
like,
cockpit, yeah, it's so perfect. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And like I know there's like, you know, Elite Dangerous and other games like sure. that do it a little better, but man, it just feels so good. It just feels so good. So like I would highly advise if you know, if like you have not jumped back in to check out the mechs in a No Man's Sky to jump back in for sure.
All right, you sold me. I'm doing it this week. I have not checked out the mechs in No Man's Sky, and actually I thought I was going to be putting tons of hours in it when it finally was released on VR, and I put a few in and I got sidetracked. I really need to go back to that game again and visit Christian's home planet, because in VR I feel like all the improvements you put in, Christian, would just really show. You know, you can visit other people's places now, you know, they made that possible. So
I don't think anyone needs, I don't, my planet's hopefully been wiped from
no, it's still there, just been taken over by weeds, by like
animals. Probably for the best. The
overgrown
for yeah. the best.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I can't say the same with Half-Life Alyx. And it's not that it's a bad game. I mean, I've been what? Playing it. I think the production levels are phenomenal, but it is the first VR game that I've ever played that has made me sick.
Wow. It's the first VR game I've heard.
Yeah. Now, like, I am trying to play it with, like, you know, all the motion on. So, like, no warping and stuff like that, because that's how I feel like. If I'm playing in VR, that's how I want to play it, and I can't do it.
Have you played other games with none of the warping on and all that stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just because it's, like, that good, like, that immersive.
Yeah.
That my brain is like, what's going on here? But it is, like, I can play it for maybe 30 minutes, and then my stomach's like, no.
I'm so sad to hear that. That's the first time I've heard that with that game. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just me. I mean, it's just like a person thing. I don't think it's a game. So I'm probably gonna try it with the warping on, because like, you know, I mean, what I played was phenomenal. You know, like it really felt like, hey, like they really nailed this. But yeah, I was really disappointed, because I pretty much, you know, thought that I was invulnerable to the VR like queasiness. But
oh man.
Half-Life.
Well, now I'm bummed out. That's I hope that the teleporting works for you, because I haven't tried the game teleporting, but I imagine it would still be pretty great. So
yeah, I'm sure, but I just want to play it as I feel like it was meant to be played.
You know? Oh yeah, I mean there are sections where you want to, like, you have to crawl around in things and go slowly, and it does feel like creeping your way around a, you know, a darkened cellar where you only have your flashlight to guide you, and there's creepy crawlies all around is yeah, it's pretty good. But well, I hope the next time you're on, you're like, oh, I love it, it's great.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm gonna, not that you have to feel that way,
but Jeff won't ask you back if you're not like that, so
there's only one rule on this show. Well, I have been playing a VR game that it's not new, but I somehow never really played it until a buddy of mine called me up and was like, hey man, we haven't hung out in a long time. It's, you know, we're all locked down in quarantine. Wouldn't it be great to play a multiplayer VR game where you and I and somebody else can hang out? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. Do you have any suggestions? And, you know, we talked about Raw Data, and you know, there's a number of really great multiplayer. Rec Room is a great multiplayer VR game. He's like, no, have you played Carnage Chronicles? And I said, no, I have not played Carnage Chronicles. He's like, oh, I'm buying it for you. We're doing this. So he and I and a third friend of ours got in and played Carnage Chronicles. And how I missed this game, I will never know. It is exactly my jam. It is a VR dungeon crawling fantasy game with all the trappings of a great RPG dungeon crawler. You know, you go to the store and you buy cool weapons, you equip them, you defeat monsters who can drop cool weapons themselves or drop money. Then you go back, you buy cooler things, and you keep going. I mean, I love these games. I love these kinds of games. There are two different classes in the game, a warrior and an archer. Unfortunately for us, on the night we played all together, the three of us, we all, unbeknownst to the others,
selected archer as our class. So we were all three archers, and I think our night would have gone much smoother if we'd had at least one warrior with us to be a tank to soak up a lot of that damage. But we were all trying to stand in the back and pew, pew, pew at the bad guys. And this game gets brutal. I mean, there are a lot of different difficulty settings. We were playing on normal. It has a, like, hard, and then, like, I think two above that, it has like impossible as a difficulty level. We found normal to be utterly brutal. And again, not smart people, because we should have just stopped, had somebody change class to warrior and start over. But you kind of have to do a few things with the class you select before you can jump into multiplayer. So it would have been a little bit of a hassle. We all prepared. It's like, okay, we're going to play this on such and such a night. So jump in, play an hour as your character, get everything ready and get ready for multiplayer. And we all did without telling each other what we what class we picked, and we just all picked Archer, which is just hilarious. But also, it was a binary choice, you know, it was a 50-50 chance. So the game, I mean, the game is very fun. You are going through these really very well-detailed Unreal Engine environments, caves and, you know, temples. And there are goblins and werewolf dogs and you know, all kinds of the spiders and all kinds of stuff coming at you, and they are coming at you, man. The intelligent bad guys, like the goblins, do this devilish thing where they can dodge at the last second your arrows. I've never seen a video game do this, truly, where they're like coming at you, and they like Neo. You know, it's like Neo from the Matrix. They're like, whoa, oh, wow. Whoa, whoa, as arrows are coming by him. So you have these cool strategies where you're like, okay, I'm going to shoot an arrow at it to get it to try to duck underneath. And you shoot low as it ducks underneath so we can still get a headshot.
Oh, wow.
Really fun stuff like that. That's they cool. do a lot of, yeah, it's super cool. I literally never seen a game do it quite like that. They have, you know, enemies placed in fun spots, like hiding behind doors. So you go in a room and then there's an enemy behind it. It's pretty well designed. Also, the enemies can be dumb where, you know, you walk into a room, there's 10 of them and they all come running at you. And so it's just like, oh, run. And it can be very overwhelming, very fast. I think the idea is that you need to have a warrior who runs in the center with a shield and absorbs a lot of that while the archers stand in the back and pew pew. We were all just like backpedaling wildly and shooting arrows as fast as we could, and you know, by halfway through we were getting killed pretty frequently. But it was good fun, man. And co-op in VR is such a great experience. There's really nothing like it. I know that co-op games in general are fun. Yes, I love hanging out, playing Destiny, playing Division, playing all those games, hanging out with your friends, playing World of Warcraft for that matter. Just hanging out with your friends on chat and playing a game is great fun. Being in the same virtual environment, seeing them move around, seeing their, you know, being able to wave at them or have hand gestures that do certain things, that level of immersion. If anybody's played Star Trek Bridge Crew or any of those multiplayer VR games, it is next level. And so, you know, this was great fun, even if we got obliterated pretty quick. But we want to, you know, I think we're planning to have another night where one of us plays, at least one of us plays a warrior. I'm sure next time we'll all log on and we'll all be warriors, and then it'll be ridiculous in a different way. But it's cool, man. The game looks great. The levels, like I said, are challenging, and there's new enemies frequently, and there's, you know, you're trying to accumulate more and more stuff. So it's got a cool gameplay loop. And it has a story. I wasn't really clued in much to the story because we're kind of co-oping it and fast forwarding through a lot of the dialogue, but you have this cool, like, Skeksis looking guy who's telling you about the world and asking you to go through portals and do cool stuff. I was very impressed with Carnage Chronicles. We were playing it on Steam, but I think it's also available on Oculus Store as well. All right. That's going to do it for VR talk. And for this episode, I want to thank our last sponsor, which is The Gaming Ride Home. The Gaming Ride Home podcast is the one podcast video game obsessives listen to every day. It is video game news, all the headlines, rumors, reviews, hardware leaks, release date confirmations, and more, all delivered to you every day at 5 p.m. The show is hosted by former Game Informer and IGN legend Kyle Hilliard, and it's only 15 to 20 minutes long. It's like the Too Long Didn't Read as a service. Kyle is online all day reading all the tweets, checking all the rumor blogs, consolidating all the chatter around the entire world of gaming so that he can catch you up on everything that happened while you were busy living life. So if you need a daily dose of video game news in your life every day, search your podcast app right now and subscribe to The Gaming Ride Home. All right, we do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Sharif Jackson, thank you so much for being here, sir.
Fun as usual. Thank you so much. You're always a blast.
All right, man. Where can people keep up with you and your goings on online?
Yeah, so SharifJackson.com, S-H-A-R-E-E-F, Jackson.com. That has all my website stuff, my about page, all my links to all my other ongoing projects, such as Where I Was a Waterdeep, and my YouTube page and all that good stuff. You can also follow me at Sharif Jackson on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, pretty much everywhere. As I said at the beginning of the show, Rivals of Waterdeep, our D&D show, comes back on June 21st. It's on, on every Sunday at noon central, on twitch.tv/DND.
And they'll be singing evidently the next time you see them. So
yes,
singing.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see that. That's amazing.
Yeah, I don't even know, man. I'm kind of scared, but we'll see.
I love it. Very, very cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
This is an official Last of Us podcast that premieres June 9th. That's not for a little while still. We opened the show with it. We talked about games. I am going to be doing more to support my community, Black Lives Matter. And I would encourage everybody to do the same, to find a way to support their community. Know Your Rights Camp is an organization that I have liked, founded by Colin Kaepernick. Also, Southern Poverty Law Center is an organization I have been close with since my time working as an attorney. And there are many, many more out there that are worthwhile. And I would encourage you to find ways to support your community and do the right thing. And that's going to be the bulk of my week. It is an emotional week, and I will leave it at that.
Very cool. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. I have several other shows for you to listen to, including a show about movies and TV shows called The Slash Filmcast, that you can find at slashfilmcast.com. I have a show that is a comedy science show. It'll teach you something and make you laugh a little bit while doing it. In fact, this week's episode, it's called We Have Concerns. You can find it at wehaveconcerns.com. And this week's episode, one of my favorite ones, we talk about maybe what will be the theory of everything, which is pretty great. Pretty great.
Like the movie?
Yeah, the movie. No, a potential like theory of all things, like a simple theory of there's
the Academy Award winning.
Well, man, it's combining quantum mechanics with general relativity, man. Come on.
Yeah, come on, Christian.
I just know the movies.
Anyway, so yeah, check that out. Wehaveconcerns.com. Also, I do a Dungeons and Dragons show as well. Sharif and I high-fiving as DMs. You know, Christian doesn't really get to hang out with us because we're DMing. But I do a show called The Dungeon Run, which you can find actually this week. You can find it on IGN. IGN picked up an episode and promoted it for us, and I'm really so proud of that. So you check it out. Awesome. Yeah, I'm so happy. You can check out the IGN version. You can find that on IGN.com. We were on their homepage for a while. I'm sure you can find it easily. You can also find it on their YouTube channel, the IGN YouTube channel. We are there. So if you see it there, we're hoping that they're going to continue partnering with us. So that it would be great if you checked out our show, which is really a fun show. You can also listen to it as an audio podcast, or when we record live on Caffeine. You can check us out Wednesday night, 6 p.m. Pacific time at caffeine.tv/thedungeonrun. All right. Also, hey, if you want to email us here at this show, you can do so at dlcfeedback@gmail.com or check out our Discord. We have a DLC Discord that's been around for years, and I just became a member of it just a few weeks ago. So I'm talking
now
about
it
that.
Now it matters.
Now it matters. I apologize to the lovely community that was built up despite me, but I'm now I've discovered Discord's a thing. Everybody, Discord. Who knew? And I love it. So grateful to all the folks hanging out in the Discord, and hope you will check out our DLC Discord group as well. We also have a subreddit. Lots of wonderful people talking about video games and other stuff. So check that out. All right. Let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion.
Sharif, do you have something to help people get through their week?
Yeah. If you like music, Versus, which is Z's instead of the S's. I know, annoying Z's. But it's been a pretty cool initiative that was started by the producers Swizz Beatz and Timbaland. And they've basically been like putting like fan favorite groups where they each have to play 20 of their best songs, and they get on Instagram Live and they go back and forth and they share stories and they laugh and they celebrate each other, and it's just fantastic. They had like the RZA and DJ Premier, which was great. They had Erykah Badu and Jill Scott. So they've like had a lot of these iconic hip hop and R&B groups, mostly from, I would say, like the 80s and the 90s. It's just a good fun thing to focus on instead of all the craziness in the world. So if you go to, I believe it's like Versus Online on like Twitter, they have like all the schedule and like all that stuff. It's like a bunch of fun.
Awesome.
So I would suggest you check it out.
Yeah, I feel like if you haven't watched it, you've probably seen clips from it, because there's always like a few things that seem to go viral out of each time they get people together, and the whole show, like the whole episodes are worth watching. It's really incredible.
Dude, the Ludacris versus Nelly is the first one I saw, and I was like, this is fun. Very cool. Again, that's Versus, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Versus? Yeah, with Z's. Christian Spicer, what about you? You got a parting gift?
I do. One is broad and the other is, you know, I don't feel good about it, but I am going to recommend it. Journaling is the broad one. I think especially always, not even especially now, but I think it's worthwhile. I like putting pen to paper, which I know is, you know, not the fastest way to do it, but it helps slow me down. And I would encourage others to maybe try to do the same and slow down and connect. And I find journaling is helpful no matter what it is that you're writing. Just give yourself, you know, 5-10 minutes is all it needs to be. The one that I'm like, but I'm going to recommend it because I don't think they've done a good job with how they transitioned to it. But HBO Max is out, and it's like everything HBO plus Friends, you know, basically.
You may already have it.
Exactly.
You may already have it. Who knows?
You might have already, apps have already been force updated to it, and then you lost your playlists, which is very frustrating. It might not be available on your device, but that being said, I am enjoying HBO Max so far, where it's the same price that my HBO Now subscription was, and it added a whole bunch of content. So far, so good. But I do find the messaging and the rollout has been less than clear and less than ideal. But there's good stuff to be watched in out there, and I'd recommend, you know, trying to find some of the lesser known things that exist in the library and HBO Max that are a lot of
fun. They have Criterion Collection, which is pretty amazing to have there as part of a subscription.
And also Friends.
I like to think of it as a guy named Max who's just like, I'm HBO Max. How you doing? I'm HBO Max. Anyway.
They cut me out of Sopranos, so I bought the company.
HBO Max, what are you going to do? we got a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This was sent by Daniel Walsh. Daniel says, hello, all. So the 15th was the end of one of my favorite shows ever, Netflix's She-Ra and the Princess of Power. It was something I knew nothing about when it came out, but I gave it a try because the poster looked really cool. And then I was hooked pretty much right away. It has a super interesting world with deep and well-rounded characters, beautiful art and animation, and strong themes. It's 5 seasons of 13 episodes each, and 2 seasons are really one split in half. So don't be intimidated by the length. Thank you very much, Daniel. Very cool. She-Ra on Netflix. Have either of you guys watched any of this? I have not.
I started it. I tried to watch it with the girls, but they are poke maniacs right now, and have been. So it's hard to do anything else. But it is, the animation is really great, and I didn't get far enough. I think we did 2 episodes before they bounced off, but I want to get back to it.
I mean, I'm old enough that I used to watch the old She-Ra in real time as it was being released, but I have not checked out this new one, and I've heard it's very good, as Daniel was saying.
Yeah, check it out. Great things.
Yeah, check it out. Give it a shot. For me, as an old also, it did. I'm like, this isn't She-Ra. Like, it's, you know, a retelling. It's not what I remembered, at least. But if you do give it time, stick with it, because I also have heard it's incredible.
Cool. My parting gift is a YouTube channel that needs probably none of my help. It's very, very popular. It's got millions of subscribers. But I didn't know about it until a friend of the show, Danish Syed, told me about it. And now it is basically, it's kind of my soul food. It nourishes my soul when things are feeling very out of control in this topsy-turvy world we are in now. And I can't bear looking at the news very much longer. At the end of the night, when I'm not watching The Last Dance, now that I've finished The Last Dance, I now watch Luke Towen on YouTube. Luke Towen is an Australian, I believe, who builds scale models, like train models, and does it incredibly. Builds these just insanely detailed, tiny scale versions of various things. Buildings, towns, waterfalls, you name it, he has built it, and it is extraordinary to watch. It is a very step-by-step process. There's no frills. He's just monologuing over the top of it. It's very much, you know, it's very much like Bob Ross, but without the sort of hippiness of it. It's just a matter-of-fact instruction of how to do the most extraordinary things. And it is, he demonstrates a level of patience and attention to detail that I find superhuman. And it is so beyond me to be able to be that patient and work in that kind of detail. I'm just rubbish at arts and crafts anyway. And to see someone take the time and at the steadiness of hand to make something out of nothing, something that is objectively beautiful, and the step-by-step process of doing it, it just really calms my mind. And you see the process, you see the skill, you see the creation of something that he has control over, you know? And I just cannot recommend it more. It's Luke Towen, Towan, on YouTube. You will be blown away. He also photographs the models in a way that makes them look real. So it's really neat to see something he made, and then you can look at a photo of it, and it looks like it's mind blowing. And you know, I've talked many times on the show about my love of little diorama things, and this is totally scratching that itch. So check it out. Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Sharif Jackson and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for hanging out with all of us in real time. We appreciate you. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those cool bumpers. Thank you to each and every one of you for listening. We appreciate you, and we hope this has been a nice respite for a little while. But remember, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.